I am Milind Katti, CEO and co-founder at Demand Farm. You are listening to the SaaSholes.
Welcome to SaaSholes, a show dedicated to issues within the software as a service industry. We are revenue ops with a
edge.
You still trying that out, huh?
Edge.
Oh, God, we'll edit that out, too. KG and myself, Pete, have a combined, 50 years of making interesting decisions. Please subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Round it down. Today, our guest is Milind Katti. Milind is the co-founder and CEO of Demand Farm. He's practiced and evolved the farming engine principle for well over a decade. He established Demand Farm in 2016. He's passionate about delivering the best of B2B key account management solutions serve the needs of sales leaders and key account managers. Demand Farm is where he continues to build software products and solutions to make account planning effective and effortless. Prior to Demand Farm, Milind co-founded and ran Demand Shore. Demand Shore started as an inside sales outsourcing company in 2005 and kept transforming to finally become an 800-plus person performance marketing company. It was acquired by Ziff Davis in 2018.
All right.
Congrats, Milind. All right. Before we get to Milind, this episode is brought to you by NeuroNoodle. If parents of athletes get a doodle of their noodle, it's a brain map before the season starts. Because if you play cricket, you might get one off of the noodle. All right?
Get a baseline to compare it to.
You get a physical every year, right? Well, get a brain checkup before the season starts. Schedule an appointment now at neuronoodle.com. KG.
Where's Jamie? Jamie should be on the show and not it takes
He's out discovering Santa Barbara and Reuben sandwiches.
Yeah, so nice for him. Yeah. Yes, whatever. Pete. Yes, Pete.
Air used to be free at the gas station, now it costs $2.50. You wanna know why?
Yeah, why?
Inflation. Leave us some comments on our blog at sassholes.net. KG, you got any shout outs?
I do have a couple of shout outs. Congratulations to Aaron Blumenkrantz for starting his new position of Head of Sales, Data Cloud, Western States, and SoCal at Google. Imagine what that business card looks like, Pete. It has like a little flap
Google
with his title is so long. Congratulations to Anna Sezal for starting his new position, Account Executive at Invisible Technologies. And happy birthday to my buddy Brennan Beyer, who is my first sales manager in the online advertising space. Happy birthday, Brennan.
We love KG survivors. Yeah. Congratulate Brian Murphy for being promoted to investment banking senior analyst at Ziegler. He was a neuro student at Northwestern, and then he got an investment banking. Way to go! Wow. Way to go!
Wow.
Hey, Lauren Fish being promoted to senior enterprise account manager at Upwork. Kristen Zachs, CISSP. I have no idea what that stands for. 6 years at Johnson & Johnson. And we'd like to wish Patrick Parker a happy birthday, March 6th. And then congratulate Joel Samburski for 15 years at LPL Financial. Okay, KG, how do you know Milind? I remember that we talked, I forgot who it was, talked about Demand Farm, but they were pretty passionate about the product.
Well, yeah. So we had Jared Johnson, who's the chief customer officer at Task Us, on the show in December. And he told us his best secret was Demand Farm. And he called it the most robust, integrated, strategic account planning tool that he had ever seen. And I was like, I got off the show and I had to reach out to Milind immediately and say, we have to get you on the show. Because, you know, Pete, we don't talk a lot about strategic account management or account management. We talk about like hunting and killing and bringing in new accounts. For you know, chief customer officer at a publicly traded company to talk about Demand Farm as like his best kept secret was absolutely awesome. So thanks for coming on the show, Milind.
Thank you. Thank you so much, KG and Pete. My pleasure. I'm loving it.
Great. Well,
It's early.
Tell us about yourself. How did you get to where you are today?
Sure. So I'm born and brought up in India, educated in India, like most 90s kids in India, I also did my graduation in electronics engineering and then an MBA in marketing. I mean, most middle class children in India did that. So we're kind of equivalent to baby boomers of US, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So because 90s is when the liberalization happened, the economy opened, and then we were there, like wanting to get to college.
Mm-hmm.
So took advantage of that. And then, so if you're slightly smarter, you did all these things in college. So so early 2000s was I worked in corporate world. I mean, I used to be a sales guy with a very large automotive company here in
India. That wasn't Tata Motors.
Yes, that was at Tata Motors.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So I used to sell trucks. I mean, so it was fun.
Okay.
So that was my first job selling trucks soon after my college.
Got it.
So around 2000 is when almost a lot of services were getting outsourced to India.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we were kind of late by then. By 2005, we figured out, okay, like, is there something that's still out there? And we figured probably inside sales is so much harder to outsource, especially in those days when even LinkedIn didn't exist. But we said, nevertheless, okay, let's try it out. And then the business models evolved, the digital marketing evolved, the customers evolved, and then whole lot of solutions evolved. And then over the next 12, 13 years, we kept transforming. And eventually by 2018, I think we're a full-fledged performance marketing company with plenty of demand gen solutions to global companies, and also I think we also owned a couple of very famous digital media properties like MartechAdvisor.com and then a couple of them, and eventually Ziff Davis, one of the NYSE listed, one of the largest digital media companies, I guess. They own Mashable, they own a whole lot of stuff. I mean, so they acquired us because it was a good India-US combination. Is really, really a good model, mm-hmm, for them to do that. So that was good for us. So in the meanwhile, because we had worked with hundreds of B2B companies in their sales and marketing processes, we had thought about this idea in terms of account planning software and so on. So in 2016, we had started this already before this acquisition. And so we continue to run that and build that. I used to spend most times in the US until the pandemic hit. So shuttle between India and then US.
So account management, what does that mean?
So at a very simple side of the spectrum, account management is about growing your existing customer revenue with cross-sell, upsell, or farming and mining your accounts. That's the simplest definition of it. A slightly bit more on the other side of the spectrum is about helping your large strategic accounts achieve their strategic goals with your solution. I mean, so that's a little esoteric, but some companies do that. But what I have seen is most companies are somewhere in between this, depending upon their size, their maturity, the size of the companies themselves and size of their accounts. So all of that, there'll be somewhere in between. Somebody would make account management and simple cross-sell, upsell, increase revenue to helping customers achieve their strategic goals. Mm-hmm. I mean, right? Somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
But I also love the other definition of account management where I talked about a couple of years ago. So while sales is about, okay, selling what you have, I believe account management is about helping customers buy. Not really sad.
Well, it is, you're using, big words that Pita and I don't understand, like esoteric, but it's funny though that you say that, because for my entire career, Melinda, I've always considered account management to be sales. And I've found myself getting checked by CEOs from time to time when I talk about sales, broadly speaking, and I mean sale, new business sales, account management, and all that kind of stuff there.
Yeah.
And then they say, oh no, sales, that just means new business. Account management is something else, you know? And it's like, no, like selling to current customers and upselling, it's still sales. And I don't look at it as any sort of like, lesser job. So yeah, it does sound a little cheesy to say like, yes, account management is about, helping them buy. But do you feel like hunters hunting for new business can also be strategic account managers and be exceptional in both motions?
So, I mean, some people can, of course, but I think they're slightly two different skills, KG. What I've seen is hunters are more like door openers, you know, so they're a lot more flamboyant.
Yeah.
They're comfortable in a conference, right? So they go and meet and talk to anybody. They can take people duck hunting or you know, to Madison Square Garden for games and things like that. I've seen account managers not so comfortable with it.
Yeah.
They're more like domain specialists. I mean, they work little slowly and they also have luxury of time. I mean, the account managers, unlike the sales guys or the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's they're mostly, I mean, it's better off if a company can afford these two different personas in these two different roles. At some point of time, they need to separate the two characters, I believe. Yeah,
yeah, I completely agree. That specialization. I've always said, Milan, show me a salesperson that tells me that they do really good at hunting and proposing and closing, as well as account management and renewing, and I'll show you a liar. I'll show you a liar because you can't be you just can't be good at all of. Yes, there's exceptions, yeah, but you just can't be good at all of those things.
What does the man farm do?
So what happened is, as I was saying, so we did work with a lot of B2B companies, mostly technology companies, and in their sales and marketing processes as part of their partners, wherein we used to work for them in those areas, some of that was contracted to us. So what we saw was when it comes to account planning per se or managing your existing accounts, which is mostly 70-80% of their revenue, okay, for the current year.
Sure.
It was mostly in the account plans for PowerPoints, I mean, account financials and spreadsheets and so on. And then the account plans, it was not digital. It was, there were CRMs for managing your contacts, opportunities, tasks, activities. Mm-hmm. But account plans were not digital. Account plans were not data-driven. Account plans were completely individual-driven.
Yep.
And so that kind of... let us start thinking about this particular problem. And then we started building software tools for it. And of course, I mean, so nowadays you need to build all software tools as a SaaS model. And then today we have three or four core modules to the product, which is about like we have relationship intelligence as the first model. Second one being account planning as a model, and then third one is opportunity planning as a model. And all on top of all of these three, we have insights module, which kind of does, depending upon the data size, etc., talks about next best action, the recommendation engine. So depending upon whatever they are, all of these are like progressive and modular, depending upon what customers want. So that is, that's what it is. I mean, like, for example, in case of... Taskus, I mean, the one example that we saw is I think close to 120 of the large account plans are now done inside Salesforce using Demand Farm.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of intelligence now, instead of 200 PowerPoint, 130 PowerPoints, you now have digital account plans sitting inside which are data. So the story that these 30 account plans, 130 account plans that can tell to the leaders are amazing.
Well, let's expand on that further. So you talked about a problem set that you saw with these current customers doing account plans outside of Salesforce and nothing was digital. Yeah. We had blueprints sitting in Google Sheets. So I know exactly what you're talking about. What were some of the other problems that you observed in customers with their account management that led you to create Demand Farm?
So essentially the whole thing starts from here, right? Basically you are account plans in PowerPoint, financials in spreadsheets, opportunities and contacts in your CRM.
Yeah.
And then more importantly, there's a lot of tribal knowledge, what I call as a tribal knowledge in terms of like, who's my supporter? Who controls what budget? What is the political connection between the people in this account, right? So who really makes the decisions, right? Those kind of, that kind of knowledge, all of that is a tacit knowledge which comes with the people, goes with the people. So now if you combine all of this, it results in four or five challenges or difficulties or problems for the customer. So one is the continuity, as you're saying. So there is, and this kind of knowledge, this kind of intelligence is takes time to build as to who has a budget, who is my supporter, who is my detractor, things like that, right? What are the various buying centers in this in this account? Where are those individual units that I can sell? So you lost that continuity if you didn't have a digital plan, one. The second thing that we saw is a lot of companies, mostly mid and large, they invariably invest in some kind of an account planning methodology, right? It could be like somebody who is going to McKinsey to build for them, or Miller-Hyman, which is a branded methodology, or their own homegrown methodology based on whatever the head. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, you spend all that money, you train people, right? Now, but you couldn't institutionalize it. So everybody is very enthusiastic. I have seen everyone gets trained in November, soon after Thanksgiving. People use those templates and then make the plan in December, and everybody forgets it by January.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now how can you bring all of that and then institutionalize that and ensure that everybody does that year over year over year and actually keep bettering it in? So what I call it as institutionalizing your key account management, key account planning, and then also then the governance and review becomes so much more easier.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing, the third challenge that I saw was the insights, as I was talking about, right? So I have seen some crazy amount of insight that come about when you combine the 130 or 200 account plans. I mean, usually it is, I have seen that account managers, it comes naturally to them. They want to sell the existing solutions in the existing relationships. But the CEO has launched new products, which he believes are the future of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it's so much more harder to sell those because you need to build newer relationship probably. You need to sell them to new set of people. So now when you combine all the account plans, then you see that, hey, nobody's selling this. And I've seen a lot of CEOs and head of sales ask that question. Why are we not selling this in this account? I mean, why are we not planning for this particular new solution and in this account and that account? So a lot of such insights basically is another challenge. Those are some of the challenges that we saw. And I think increasingly, I believe account planning can't be a static yearly activity anymore. It must be dynamic. It must be a living, breathing thing that exists throughout, probably in a digital system. I mean, we saw that, right? Like, who thought this Ukraine thing will happen? And a lot of account managers have to change their plans now. And we're only in February or March.
Sure.
Right. So similarly, when the pandemic hit, I mean, things have changed. So it's a lot more dynamic than what it used to be. People used to make 3-year plans. I mean, so you can't even imagine that now.
Yeah, now.
So now I'm thinking even probably yearly plans are a passe in most places.
Right.
So they had to be dynamic.
Melind, what is relationship mapping?
One of the things that I learned, I think a long time ago, I read a HBR article on account planning or a book. I don't remember where. So what the beautiful thing that they said is that the account management is about looking at the forest as well as the trees, right? So to kind of extend that, right? So like your contacts, opportunities, and say activities, tasks, etc. are the trees. We tend to keep looking at opportunities, contacts only in the typical world of the CRM world. Now, that doesn't give you enough, right? It's just a list of contacts, a list of opportunities, value, etc. Now, think of using that data and creating a visual map of your relationships in terms of who we all do this. I mean, we all did this as account managers, right? So who reports to whom? Who's my supporter? Who controls what budget? Who influences whom, etc.?
Yeah.
Take that same thing and visualize a relationship map or an org chart kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the forest view of your account. Now, zoom in on, okay, this guy controls this budget, but we don't even know this guy. And now zoom into a contact level and take some actions and come back. So it's about account management. That's what I call as a relationship map. And along with this, there was another thing, which was the white space part of it. Again, the same concept, right? So imagine your columns being all your products, and rows being the various buying centers in your account,
mm-hmm.
right? So it could be geographies, or it could be functions, or a combination, depending upon the nature of the business. Let's say I have 7 products that I sell, or 7 solutions that I take to market, and I have 4 things like North America, APAC, EMEA, and then Asia as buying centers in that account,
mm-hmm.
right? Sometimes it could be HR, CFO could also be the buying centers. sometimes it's retail bank in Europe could be a buying center, right? It depends on the nature of the business. Now, you create those buying centers. These are the seven products. What we want to do is we want to figure out, okay, which of my product is sold where? Where are my current activities? How happy or unhappy the customer is with what they are already using? That is the forest view again. And then you will figure out what are the white spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Go to that white space, zoom in now, and then figure out, okay, now what do I do? And then come back. So giving the ability of this, like forest trees, is extremely critical if you ask me about the account. I think the most important thing about the account management process is, and I think we are one of the first in the world to build tools for this, to do this for account managers.
You know, I love your forest through the trees analogy. It's so perfect because when I've led account management and strategic account management teams in the past, the account managers oftentimes tend to be very myopic about who they're talking to and who they're dealing with. And one of the best stories that I always like to tell is that one account manager was talking to one particular customer, and that particular person at the customer was very, very happy and doing very, very good. And yet we learned that there was another division entirely that didn't know anything about our product. But yet they were right here. They didn't know how big the account was. They didn't think to ask how big the account was. They didn't think to ask who else could be also buying, from us. And once somebody else noticed that there was like, my gosh, this company has other locations and other divisions, the account blew up. But the account manager themselves were sitting in the trees with the customer, the person in front of them.
And the worst part is before you know it, actually competition is already gone there. I mean, then it's too hard.
Milan, what is relationship mapping?
So relationship map is about converting your list of contacts into a visual canvas, bring them in and kind of figuring out, one is the hierarchy, the formal hierarchy. The other thing is, who are my supporters? Who are my detractors? For example, the green ones are your supporters. The red ones here are not your supporters or detractors. And then, for example, Michelle here, you don't even know. If you have these five ticks, means they have a lot of power in the organization. This little crown here, this comes from directly from the Salesforce data that you're currently discussing an active opportunity with Brian Foster here. And then there are a lot of other flavors to this. This is just a high level view of how. Now this gives a, this kind of gives a forest view that I was talking about. And then you drill down and then say, okay, how do I build relations with Brian now or with Kirtanayan and so on. Yeah.
So Milind, you use the word relationship mapping, and I have heard strategic account managers say to me, KG, you don't understand. Account management is all about the relationship. And what they mean is, like you were saying, duck hunting and taking to dinner and Lakers games and things like that. You're shaking your head. You disagree. Tell me, what do you think building a relationship as a strategic account manager should entail?
No, I'm not saying that those things are not important. Of course they're important. I mean, but that is a very superficial way of building a relationship, right?
Exactly.
So that's just probably the way I think most of us, I mean, so we care for our business, we care for our jobs, and we care for our companies. So the relationship is really how is this account manager trying to understand and visualize my problems in my organization and then helping me with it, with his solutions or something like that, right? So that is the, if I'm able to empathize that and then convince on that or articulate, that is when the real relationships are built, actually, if you ask me. The space or an environment could be a game, I'm okay, or could be a duck hunting thing, or could be a golf game. Fair enough, that's a space in which you do this activity, but just that is not enough.
It can evolve into that, but I completely I completely agree in that strategic account managers should focus on developing that relationship through listening and solving that problem that they have, and it can lead to Lakers games and duck hunting and dinners and golf and all that kind of fun stuff. But
cricket, what are you shaking your head for? Cricket.
Cricket. I don't even know. Is that
millennials?
What are you talking about?
So yeah, I mean that's like, in terms of number of people following the game, it's the largest game in the world, by the way. Just
Thank
because
you.
There are 1.5 billion people.
So. Just you're just saying.
I know. He was flexing. That wasn't our guest just flexed on us.
You can choose not to answer it, but I'm
okay.
sure you will.
Okay.
How has India evolved over the last 15 years? It used to be, all right, you want to lower your employee cost, you would outsource to India. And then India became too expensive, and then the Philippines came. How did that all evolve? And Bangalore, New Delhi, Bangalore is the it's sort of like the San Jose of India. Can you just clue everybody on the evolution?
See, I think last from 2000 from the turn of the millennium, I think things started transforming. It took a while. What of course started as an opportunistic outsourcing business, both IT and then a lot of other business processes, etc. It did. I mean, it continues to grow at 20-30% with like one of the largest IT companies in India, which is TCS, employing I think close to 1 million people. So but that's one part of it. But what happened is the trickle down effect of all of that. So what it made is it made real estate, it made land, it made rest of the consumption possible. So, and with the population and with the demographic dividend, right? So unfortunately, we didn't cut down on one child on one fine day. So gradually, so today we have more young people who are paying tax than the retired people in the population mix that we have. We had to solve a lot of problems in terms of government, in terms of corruption, in terms of a whole lot of stuff, which we've solved to a large, large extent today. And therefore, today, if you see in some of the digital interventions, probably India is ahead of the rest of the world in terms of, say, payments, for example, in terms of education, the edtech piece. So you wouldn't believe that close to 100 million or at least 50 million children today do online classes in India, right?
Mm-hmm.
With companies like Byju's, which is a unicorn itself. And you'd also see that I think there were 45 unicorns, second or third highest in the world last year.
Wow.
From India.
Wow.
Right? 45 unicorns in India. I mean, so yeah, that's why I said the baby boomers, right? So we created that. I think probably next 10, 20 years is going to be a good 7-8% growth. And
wow.
I think, and then the kind of infrastructure, I think, they're building, I think, on an average, I think 40 kilometers per day of 6-lane highways now in India every day.
Wow.
Right? They're doing almost like, I think, 7 or 8 kilometers of metros in almost 25 cities in India today. Every city, I mean, so this is building metros and infrastructure and tourism.
What about the brownouts? Any more brownouts? You got enough power?
Oh, I mean, you won't believe this, that most of the country has no power cuts now. We're in fact self-sufficient in power, started exporting power now to neighboring countries. And one of the world's largest renewable energy producers, because of course there's sun 12 months a year, so you can produce whatever. Now, I mean, you can literally produce solar energy 12 hours a day. So the very innovative ways in which the irrigation canals in India now, a lot of water used to get wasted because of the evaporation. So what they've done is they've covered those irrigation canals with solar panels. That's how we're able to produce the largest amount of solar energy in the world today. So, yeah, pretty interesting, pretty exciting, though. It's just that we had too many people.
all the Bitcoin farmers are going to find you.
Good. I think it's probably the most exciting time to be there.
No, it's definitely evolved.
Going back to strategic account management, let's tell us about the role of, you know, automation and AI and machine learning in strategic account management. I mean, those sound like buzzwords to sell a lot of software.
True.
What's the reality?
What happened was I was lucky to get to a beautiful framework a couple of years ago around this, as to how do you decide on using automation and AI ML in any business, in any situation. So I adopted that to account management in a way. So the framework is pretty simple. Like, let's say on the x-axis, you have complexity of the tasks or decisions that you're making. And on the y-axis, you have frequency of their occurrence in an organization, say in a year, right? So say simple tasks, simple decisions, but very high frequency, let's say lead scoring, right? So as an example, so you want to score the lead based on the firmographic, demographic, intent, and then whatever the action, etc. You can pretty much put an algorithm, put a bot there, put a robot there, put AI machine there. So lead scoring can easily be automated.
Yeah.
There are hundreds, probably thousands and hundreds of thousands of leads in a year, depending upon the organization. So there's a lot, frequency is high,
yeah.
Complexity is low.
Yeah.
Now cut to another extreme where you have a chief sales officer or a CRO trying to decide which products to launch next year or which markets to go to next year, right? That's a very complex decision, a very complex task. Doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
You don't take such decisions like every day.
Yep.
Right? So this is on this side of the spectrum.
Yep.
So obviously you will need you don't want to use any automation there, right? You want a human being to kind of take a call there.
There's not enough data now, to use ML there because the frequency is low on both axes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right? So the complexity is very high.
Yeah. Complexity high, frequency low.
Frequency is low.
Yeah.
Right? Now, account management, I believe, is somewhere is in between on the both axes, is in the middle, right? Now, what do you do in such a situation, right? I thought that if something is in the middle, right, what's best to do is use the data because you don't have enough data, right? But you have decent amount of data and you can't eliminate the person either. Right. And but you can't expect that every account manager is a Superman who could take the decisions. So what I say is, OK, give them the insights and allow the human being to take the last decision. Give them the recommendation. Let the human take the call. So what I call this as like on the first example I gave is kind of a Wall-E, the robot. The second example is a Superman to get into that. And What I believe today, the account managers, what I want to do, make account managers is make them into an Iron Man.
Enhanced.
Right? So that Tony Stark, you give him that jacket, but he's a human being nevertheless.
Yeah, I like
that. Give him that suit. Give him the suit. Using your automation, using your AI agent. So if you try to make an account manager a Superman, a hard task, right? Because you can't scale because you have hundreds of them. There can only be one CRO actually, right? So it's too hard. But don't make your account manager into a robot either.
Right.
That's not going to work.
Yeah.
So of course things will change and then we need to observe this framework very closely. Maybe more data would come, technology, computing power would increase and a whole lot of things might happen and then that's why. But as of now, I will use this framework in whenever I try and use AI ML or an automation and say, okay, what is it that we need to do? So should I create a robot or should I leave the Superman as is or should I create an Iron Man? I mean, I
tell you that when I have asked my strategic account managers to, you know, rate and score their accounts or grade their accounts, A, B, C, D, and not provided them with insights, it's exactly what you're saying. I'm asking them to be, you know, these superheroes to make these decisions without these insights. And there's so little data when you're dealing with strategic accounts. So I like the idea of then being able to then feed them with some insights and then say, okay, now is this an A, based on what you see in the data that we're giving you, is this an A grade account? Is this a B grade account?
Yeah.
Is this a D grade account? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a very, very nice tool called what we call as an account segmentation tool, in which it's kind of configurable and then the default value. So wherein you look at, again, I'm a big fan of 2x2 matrix, everything I rely on it. So for example, you have account attractiveness versus the relationship strength. Then you get four boxes. So then you have star accounts, strategic accounts, cash cows, and then the, right, it's a standard model. So we provide this framework in our tool for account managers to, you know, assess in where is their account, right? So, and for depending upon in which box the account eventually goes into, there are different strategic imperatives for that, right? But I can give the framework, but again, I will allow the account manager a final override. It's very important. I mean, so that is because at least now we don't want to make account manager a robot.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
Milind, what is goodness?
You know, somewhere I think around 5-6 years into running my business, suddenly one day I thought that actually jerks don't make it, do they? Nice people do. Kept working with nicer people. So if I'm surrounded by nice guys, good people, life becomes so much more easier, so less stressful, right? You can collaborate better, you can innovate more, you can do so much more. So, and then I kept building on that concept, and then it just kept getting become stronger and stronger. So today, we have figured out how to hire good people in the company, and then it's so much better. And I'm not saying this from the charity or a non-profit kind of an organization. Goodness brings money.
Goodness brings money. Put that onto a bumper sticker. That's awesome.
Money is goodness.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's also true.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a simple common sense thing to do. I think companies overlook that virtue, that value in a person while in an organization. We value that a lot, along with a lot of other competencies and attitudes and aptitudes, etc. I actually did a TEDx talk on this last year, I guess. Search for Milind Kati TEDx. You should find a complete 16-minute talk on that and then I elaborate a lot more on that. Yeah.
I think I love that. There's Marketo, an amazing software product, long ago used to be known, their Salesforce used to be known as just being ruthless, a ruthless sales team, and not nice. And they weren't nice to the salespeople. They were very, you know, they would grab their customers by the throat, virtually speaking, of course. You know, they would do things like everyone stays in the office until the last person brings in the deal that gets us there. And just a lot of things that just seemed kind of like brutal. And I just don't think that's, you know, sustainable. I would say, you know, a good friend of mine, Jeff Zwelling, used to say, you know, we can be nice, but we don't have to be that nice. So I do believe that you can be good, but this doesn't mean that we're pushovers and everything is soft. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, we can be disciplined and we can be focused and we can stand up for ourselves. But you know, we can be inherently good at the same time. Right, Milind?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people confuse humility with meekness.
Weakness, right, yeah. Or meekness, you say.
Right? Meekness mm-hmm. or weakness, right? But it takes a lot of courage to be humble, trust me. And it's very important. Yeah.
Milind, all of our listeners and all the watchers out there that haven't heard about Demand Farm, what's your ideal customer profile? Who are you helping out? Who what problems are you solving?
So basically, currently we focus on B2B. Companies, mid-sized to large enterprises, mostly services companies, and nowadays even product companies as well. That's the segment where if you have 70-80% of your revenue from your existing strategic accounts, and our product is beautifully fitting there in terms of making your account plans digital, continuous, and dynamic.
So what are the essential skills that every great account manager should have or strive to have?
So I think an account manager, I could be a little biased here, but a couple of things that are additional that mm-hmm. I believe are needed. Mm-hmm. One, I think account manager is more like a general manager, right? It's kind of a mini CEO, because you need to know sales, you need to know your product, you need to know procurement, you need to know the financing, and then so a whole lot of stuff is what you need to do. Kind of you need to understand the customer's business in a business way. So therefore is more like a it's important to be a general manager kind of a product, a little more than. So the second thing is, I think an account manager, I think it should be a great collaborator, because there's so much of collaboration the account manager has to do, not only at customer side with respect to various functions from CFO to the user to everybody, but also internally. Right. So he has to collaborate with production, collaborate with marketing, collaborate with sales, collaborate with R&D, and so on and so forth to serve the customer. So if collaboration doesn't come naturally to you or you know, it's very hard to be a good account manager. And I think the third and last one, I think domain knowledge matters a lot, I think, to be a good account manager, especially in large enterprises. I mean, so for example, suppose I sell, say, a robotic process automation, right? So I'm like UiPath kind of a company. I'm an account manager UiPath, and I sell robotic RPA to insurance companies. So one, I need to know the goddamn RPA as a technology, right?
Yeah.
And two, I need to understand insurance as a business.
Interesting.
So similarly, if I work for a auto component company trying to sell to Ford Motors. Understand automotive as a business.
You would then believe firmly that strategic account managers should actually be verticalized by industry to be domain experts in both the product that they sell as well as their customers. You would, it would seem to me that you believe that they should be verticalized.
In most cases, if I'm a pharma account manager and I sell generics to a pharma, for example, or R&D services to a pharma company, I have seen account managers stick to animal health. They don't even move to human health.
Oh, what a great time. Milind, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. It's been wonderful. I know, guys. I mean, so I can't talk enough about account management and account managers, but
Yes, you can. Man, what's the best way for our listeners to learn more about you or connect with you?
LinkedIn, of course. Milind Kanti, LinkedIn, Demand Farm. I'm not a heavy user of Twitter or others, but LinkedIn and our website, I guess, demandfarm.com. Okay. Yeah, these are the two best channels.
We'll put everything in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening to the Sassholes. On behalf of KG and myself, Pete, we thank you for listening. We ask that you give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to our newsletter in the podcast notes, and you can always buy us a beer on Patreon/Sassholes. We thank you for listening.
You should.
Cue the music.